always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider and lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this fine Monday early evening, my time, late afternoon, your time probably. By you guys, I'm joined by you guys. It is a Monday episode. Lakers played yesterday, which means that we will have a true mailbag Monday. Unless you're listening to the podcast in podcast form, in which case there goes the alliteration. But today on the show, I'm going to quickly give a little quick spiel while you guys kind of filter in here about the Lakers season so far, some of the stats that are going on and that are worth monitoring, and how basically the Lakers have allowed everybody, as they tend to do, but the Lakers have allowed everybody to plant their flag on one island or another, whether you think the Lakers are legit or you think that the Lakers might be a little fraudulent, or at least not as good as their record might indicate. You can plant your flag however you want to plant your flag. So today on the show, I'm going to discuss kind of where I fall in on that spectrum. And then, give way basically once everybody is kind of in here to questions from the iTunes mailbag, from the live audience here who are watching the show live on YouTube. I ask people for questions on Twitter, so I'll get to some of those as well. And just kind of enjoy this, like I said, late afternoon together. Quick reminder, please do hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you guys are watching. So if you guys are on Twitter, you can follow me there. It's one way to make sure that you get these notifications when they go live. If you guys are watching on Twitter, but you want more specific notifications, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge and turn, follow the show, subscribe to the show, and also hit that subscribe button and the notifications button to get you going there. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning, make sure you guys are subscribed wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey. But as I've been saying lately, it doesn't matter. You like Spotify? Spotify to your heart's content. You like iTunes? Hard to mess with a classic. No matter what it is, no matter which choice you guys make, so long as y'all are subscribed and rating and reviewing and all of that good stuff, that's all that I frankly care about. But yeah, let's go ahead and dive on in, starting with kind of where I sit on the Lakers 16 games in. So on one hand, the Lakers are 12-4. They already have 8 road wins in 10 opportunities to get those road wins. No, they are not exactly slaying dragons while they're on the road, but road games in the NBA are difficult. And particularly if you're the Lakers and you know night in, night out, The arena is probably going to be sold out. The other team is going to know that too. A lot of those road games are going to be on national television for those teams. Might be one of a handful of national TV games that squad plays. So you just, the road game for the Lakers is, slightly ratcheted up a little bit compared to road games that, say, the Charlotte Hornets play. The other thing, to take into account is that you play who you play. And eventually this road schedule is going to get more difficult. And that's why it's that much more important that the Lakers have picked up 8 road wins in 10 road chances. So that's been good. They have figured out ways to, last night aside, their offense in the clutch has been very good. The defense is kind of where you would expect it to be. Not stellar, not terrible, They are doing a good job of not fouling, and for the most part this season have done a good job on the defensive rebound, defensive boards, thus eliminating some of those second chances. The Lakers just don't have good enough defenders on their team to defend multiple possessions or multiple shots per possession. So clearing those boards the way that they have has been very crucial. So that's been good. And yet, point differential tells the story of a pretty mediocre team. And if you're mediocre playing against lesser competition, that does start to make you nervous what it might look like when that competition gets more difficult. Like Raj and I talked about last night, I believe the point differential has probably updated to this point, but it probably didn't get any better for the Lakers. They only won last night by two. So the Lakers still have a 2.7 point differential so far this season. So it's like, plus 2.7 probably puts you at maybe 7 or 8 seed in the West. And, that might indicate that there might be eventually some regression on the horizon. But it also, is worth noting, by the way, that they have gotten all these wins, racked up all these road wins, while they haven't had LeBron for most of the season to this point. And when they have had LeBron, he's been clearly working himself back into shape. And he and Luka and the rest of the team are working on their chemistry together. You have Luka has missed time already this season. They basically didn't get a preseason. Now that was kind of by choice, but they didn't really get a preseason to run through a lot of their stuff. So it's been, they've been winning. And yes, they haven't been winning convincingly, but they've been winning while they have basically been running through what has essentially been their preseason. LeBron literally said that last night that, the couple of games that he's played so far in this last week, that's basically been his preseason and training camp, seeing as he wasn't able to, he wasn't able to practice with his guys last or in the month or so leading up to the season. So just got word from the South Bay Lakers that Kobe Bufkin has earned a call-up with the Memphis Grizzlies. I think that was reported earlier, but breaking news, officially official. But yeah, I would say where I sit on the matter, somewhere in the middle. I would probably say that the Lakers defense does concern me a little bit, especially if JJ Redick is going to stick with the starting group as he has so far. Starting Rui and bringing Marcus off of the bench essentially has led to or been the final, kind of nail in the coffin for any rotation opportunities that Jared Vanderbilt was going to get, because it's really difficult to have Vando and Marcus Smart out there at the same time. And if you take Vando out of the rotation, that's probably one of your better athletes on the team. And in a Lakers team that was already not very athletic gets less so. So maybe we just have to hope and wait for Adu Thiro to get the call up sooner rather than later, so that the Lakers can inch closer to league average in terms of athleticism. I think that the offense has been pretty damn good considering, this is a stat that I wanted to pull up. The Lakers 3-point shooting has been abysmal, and it's been abysmal because the guys who were shooting the most 3-pointers have been abysmal, whether outright abysmal or by their own terms. Luka Doncic is taking 11 threes a game so far this season, and he's only making 31.1% of those threes. Austin Reeves is shooting 7.9 threes per game, and he is only shooting 31.1% from three. The next player up is somehow worse in terms of percentage. Marcus Smart is shooting 4.8 threes per game, and he's only knocking down 24.2% of those threes. And a lot of those threes are butt ass naked open. And that has really hurt the Lakers spacing and offense. There's a question coming a little bit later about, like, what did you think about Gabe starting in Marcus's place or Rui's place? Rui, like, we'll talk about Rui here in a bit, but like, we know that JJ Redick is always going to lean towards spacing. And if Marcus Smart is destroying that spacing, I don't think JJ is going to trust him to close some of these games. Might trust him to open some of those games, but I don't know if he's going to trust him to close them. The next player up is Rui, and he's the only player shooting on volume or even decent volume. He's only shooting about 3.5 attempts from three a game. And he's the only one, though, shooting at least that much who is hitting them at an above league average clip. And he's shooting 48% from three. And you were sitting there like, how do we get this guy more touches? Well, defenses have basically realized he's the only guy that they really need to close out hard to. And they've really tried to limit his opportunities from deep. You can go down the stretch or go down the list from here. LeBron, he's only played in a couple games, but he's only shooting 28.6% from three. Dalton Connect is shooting 32% from three on 3.3 attempts per game. He's catching DNP CDs recently, though, so his stats don't really count. Jake LaRavia is shooting just over three shots from three per game, and he's only hitting 34.6% from three. So it's like, and a lot of these shots are good shots. I would say the only shots that I wish the Lakers would kind of tweak their shot diet on are probably Austin's, and then maybe by extension Luka, where those guys are shooting those step back ISO three pointers that I just don't love. Outside of that, it's a lot of attempts that are coming within the rhythm of the offense. Some grenades here and there. A lot of Austin's attempts from three are of the grenade variety, as Raj and I kind of talked about yesterday. But to me, you know, when we talk about, are the Lakers for real? Are they not? What it all kind of comes down to for me is whenever the Lakers, or if the Lakers start hitting their, especially open threes, that point differential is going to climb back up. If they start a lineup that makes more sense than the one that they have started the last couple of games, and you aren't playing even during LeBron, Luka, or behind in the LeBron, Luka, and Austin minutes, that's going to help your point differential. So, like, to me, when we talk about where the Lakers currently sit statistically and specifically with point differential, to me, it all kind of comes down to, and why I'm not all that worried about it, is like there are some either tweaks that the Lakers can make, or you know, just regression type improvement that we might see from them that would address some of the stats that would tell you that the Lakers are a mostly mediocre team. So I don't think they're mediocre. I don't necessarily think they're the two seed in the West by the end of the season either. Not without some clear upgrades. And, you know, while we're talking about shooting, and while I spent the last, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes talking about shooting, this is one of those things that, like, I'm really excited for the Mark Walter era of the Lakers to start kicking in, because, like, awesome timing here, Christian. Christian Navarro, A295. Can the Lakers hire a shooting coach? Exactly. Right? Like, this is the thing. Will a shooting coach fix all of this? Maybe, probably not. But for the sake of my own sanity, can we just see, right? Like, I was always a pretty bright kid. And to the extent to that, like, I probably should have been in better classes, and I got bored, and I often, like, just kind of wandered away from whatever the lesson was we were supposed to be listening to. And I would, like, just not study the way that I should have studied or put in the work because I was bored by a lot of the work. And so one of the things that used to drive my dad crazy was, like, I would take a quiz, or I would bring back a progress report or something like that, and they would have, like, a B average, or I'd get, like, a B or a B plus on a quiz or an A minus on a quiz. And it's like, I would tell dad, yeah, look at the grade I got. I didn't even study. And my dad was just like, then study and get better grades. You know, like, and that's kind of how I feel about the Lakers. It's like, yeah, we're winning games. We're 12-4 and we aren't even studying. And it's like, then study. You're winning games while you are almost like the analogy is almost too on the nose for it to be funny, but you're shooting yourself in the foot and you're probably missing your foot because you don't employ a shooting coach. And this is the kind of thing that, like, with the Dodgers and Pete and I have been going back and forth about this texting. And the thing that I'm probably the most excited about in this new era of Lakers basketball or the Lakers organization is you look at the Dodgers. And they go out and they spend a ton of money on individual coaching, pitching coaches, fielding coaches, swing coaches, personal trainers, nutritionists, dietitians, like all of these things. They spend an arm and a leg so that they maximize the return on the investments that they make into their personnel. And you look at the way that the Lakers have kind of operate, they like to say that, like, we like to empower our players to go out and improve on their own individual basis at their own pace with their own people, yada, yada, yada. And that's fine if those players are responsible enough or smart enough to be empowered. Kobe, a relentless worker, right? That dude was just maniacal when it came to the work that he put in. He thrived in the Lakers organization because they were like, you know what? You do you, man. You keep doing whatever you're doing because clearly that is working and Kobe would continue to work. LeBron done really well as a Laker because he, again, is maniacal when it comes to his work ethic and the amount of work that he puts in on his body and the amount of work that he puts in on his game, you know, and the Lakers basically tell him, you know what, man, you're killing it. Keep killing it. And then you look at somebody like Jared Vanderbilt, who I don't think really entrusts the best personal trainers. And they've empowered him in much of the same way that they empower some of their other players. And all that's happened is Jared Vanderbilt has probably gotten worse as a basketball player since he got to the Lakers. And it's because the Lakers at no point have stepped in and been like, hey, what are you actually working on? What's the process that you're going through? Walk me through your process as you're trying to get better as a shooter. And he's like, oh yeah, I have a football coach. What? You know, and so that's the case. You could run through like the players that we get kind of frustrated about. Like, you know, Lakers fans always say the Lakers organization is where shooters go to die. Well, yeah, that's what's going to happen when you never employ a shooting coach. And you know, I'll have people from the Lakers organization get kind of annoyed at this take and stuff like this. And what it comes down to, and they'll say, you know, well, even if we hired a shooting coach, that coach would have to work with the other guy's coach, and they'd have, like, it's different. Baseball players and NBA players are just two different types of athlete, and the level of empowerment is different in baseball versus the culture in basketball, where you do have these, you know, guys who have guaranteed contracts and there's much less competition for their positions within their own organization than there is in baseball, right? Where you have a whole minor league system waiting for their call up. And, you know, this is why it led to the Moneyball era, right? Where you've had a, you know, now multiple generations of free agents in baseball who have found that their market has completely depleted because all of these teams are like, well, I could pay free agent X this much money for this level of production, or I could just wait for one of our minor leaguers to crack the major league roster at this much money for like this much production. And that gap in production isn't enough to convince these MLB teams to actually pay up to either sign or keep free agents. And this has led to, I think, a market inefficiency for the Dodgers where they're like, wait, you're not going to pay that pitcher? Okay. And we're going to see what happens with the outfield and the right fielders that the Dodgers go out and get. But they've basically said like, well, if you're just going to get rid of this guy, let's see what we can do. And they find Max Muncy on the scrap heap and they bring him in and they coach him through, you know, changing his swing and tweaking his approach and making him a better fielder at third base. Justin Turner, same deal. You can run down the line here, Kike Hernandez, and you can find Chris Taylor. There are so many examples of the Dodgers basically like finding talented players that weren't getting the organizational support in their prior situations. They bring those guys in, they do give them that organizational support, and those guys get better. And I think here with the Lakers, you're looking at an organization that hasn't provided that organizational support. And guys haven't developed to the extent that they would want those guys to develop, right? Dalton Kinect is probably a worse NBA player now than he was when they drafted him, a year and some change ago. And you know, at a certain point, and I talked about this on an offside video, there was that report that Andrew Friedman and Farhan Zaidi are being brought in as consultants to the Lakers organization. One of the things that they're going to advise Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss and this entire Lakers organization to do is, hey, where are the people who work here? Where's your scouting department? Where's a beefed out analytics department? Where's your shooting coach? Where's your skills coach? Where's this guy? Where's this guy? Well, how do we go out and get these people? And those are the things that the Lakers are going to be working on. And I think, you know, obviously it's probably too late for Jared Vanderbilt. But moving forward, right, I was talking about this with Raj, I think, last night about a dude, Thero, in that, like, hey, dude, that guy has all the tools to be a very good NBA player. Let's see what he looks like once the Lakers approach development in the way that the Dodgers have and they get the most out of those players. Like, do I think that the Oklahoma City Thunder have excellent scouts and they have a real understanding of what they're doing when it comes to drafting players? Absolutely. But they also have built out a culture of no. This is what we are looking for you to become. This is the best path for you to become a longer term NBA player. And a guy like Isaiah Joe, right, who I think the Philadelphia 76ers just like shoot out the door. He goes to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They bring him in and they're like, hey man, you're an excellent shooter. Let's keep that. You're also a pretty decent athlete. Let's see if we could turn you into a good defender too. And now all of a sudden you are a prototypical 3-and-D wing that we are just looking to replicate over and over and over again. And lo and behold, their roster is filled with all of these guys who, like, yeah, some of them are high level draft picks, right? Chet was a very high draft pick, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was, I think, a relatively high draft pick as well. And they have these guys who, yeah, their pedigree was such that it was worth it to take a gamble on those guys. But then on top of it, they brought those guys into their organization and they're like, well, what if you approached your development this way? What if we did this and worked with your team to make sure that you're working on this and improving on this? And here are these milestones that we are looking for you to hit, these boxes that we need you to check as you become the type of player who gets minutes in our system. That's completely gone. Like, that is not a thing with the Lakers organization. That's something that the Lakers need to really work on. And so, like, this became an entirely different spiel. But when we talk about the Lakers shooting here, yeah, this is probably going to bug them and bug us for the rest of the season. But one of the things moving forward that I'm really kind of excited about is I don't think this is going to be a problem years down the line once the Lakers build out that infrastructure to make sure that guys understand which shots to work on, how, you know, what shots they want them to take, and, you know, build out a culture where it's like, yeah, we don't need that step back three with 17 seconds or 12 seconds on the shot clock. That's not a shot that we need. And if they can kind of get rid of some of those shots and tweak the shot diet, and Raj and I have talked a lot over the last couple of games about Austin Reeves' shot diet in particular. If some of those things get tweaked and the Lakers' three-point shooting elevates quite a bit, now you're probably going to take that 2.7-point differential and turn it into a double-digit point differential. And maybe, just maybe, Luka will be able to rest in some of these fourth quarters. That'd be nice, right? Like, that's I think what I'll be looking for in the next, like, you know, we always talk about the league looks at seasons in quarters. In the next quarter, once we cross that 20 game threshold, this is going to be the next thing that I'm really kind of looking for, is turning that corner, improving 3-point shooting, and watching that point differential go up. But I think the Lakers are still pretty good. That went longer than I expected it to. So I'm going to dive on into your guys' questions here. First question from the iTunes mailbag from Kush Corleone writes, hey, Anthony, congrats on the new gig. Enjoy the whole walking to my office bit. As a work from homer myself a few times a week, I always laugh about how I'm always late to work somehow in my at my desk in my bedroom. Part of it is that, like, I'm used to work from home culture, where a lot of my coworkers, whether it be at Odyssey or whatever, they tend to be late for meetings too. So I always just kind of plan on sitting down at my desk like a minute or two late. And that's when everybody's also probably sitting down. So a minute or so late is probably on time nowadays. But anyway, in your opinion, these baseball style miniseries the NBA is implementing to see if we'll stop crying about lowering the amount of games, do you think there's any advantage for us fans who want a lineup change, smart for Rui, with this style of schedule if the glaring issues happen twice in a row against the same team? Like, if we really start off slow again, make the same adjustments and come to the same result, do you think it's easier for JJ to justify a change sooner, or do coaches go by a larger sample size than that and wouldn't factor these two back-to-back games as a part of a major decision to bench Rui when he really hasn't done anything wrong? Yeah, I think the larger sample size is what matters more. And obviously results are always going to matter in this kind of topic as well. There's a lot that goes into whether or not you should be benching Rui. And one of the concerns internally from the Lakers is, what is this going to do to this guy? Is he going to remain the kind of engaged that we need him to be when he comes off of the bench? Or if we bench him, will he sulk? And now all of a sudden, like, what if moving Marcus Smart to the starting group doesn't bring the return, the shot in the arm return that you're looking for? And on top of it, Rui starts sulking and you might lose him at least for a chunk of the season, if not outright completely. Now, all of a sudden you're talking about a ripple effect that impacts the team in a variety of ways. So I am still on the side of tweaking the starters. And I think the sooner you do it, the better, so that you have the opportunity to tweak it back if you need to. But to me, to answer the question as far as like how teams handle this, one, it's a team by team basis. No two teams handle things identically the same. But also, with JJ Redick, he is taking into account the context of these games. And, with kind of older school coaches, the thinking is always, well, we're winning, so are you really going to continue to complain while we're winning? I'll raise my hand and say yes. But with JJ and some of these newer school coaches, they are less reticent to make some of those changes, even while they are racking up wins. Because it's like, yeah, we're winning, but does barely squeaking by a Utah Jazz team count as the kind of win that you want to hang your hat on? Probably not. So I would probably say that if this starting group continues to kind of flounder, and we're also the Lakers are also going to give them a little bit of grace as LeBron works himself into shape and stuff like that too. That's also a factor here. But if this group continues to flounder and the point differential continues to kind of hover at a very mediocre spot, and the plus minus gets louder and louder and louder that Marcus Smart should maybe join that starting group, I do think it won't take losing a bunch to make that change. I certainly hope so, but I just don't think JJ Redick is kind of wired the same way that like Darvin was. And that's probably why they fired Darvin and hired JJ Redick and then extended JJ Redick one season after not being Darvin Ham. All right, let's go with some of your guys' questions. Let's see. I'm going to go to Twitter and answer some of those where. So just in order of the order in which I'm seeing them, at JR Smith Range writes, one, what roster need would you like to see the Lake to see addressed by trade deadline, starting three or backup big? Two, what internal roster improvements would allow Rob to keep his first round pick heading into the summer for his inevitable just wait until we have three firsts? All right, so to answer the first question, it's bringing in a 3-and-D 2/3 is far and away what I would like to see the Lakers do. And it's like, I like Marcus Smart, love his motor, his point differential or his plus minus or his net rating, I don't think is at all a coincidence because he's the only guy in their rotation who plays that hard and is that capable defensively. So like ideally, and maybe this also answers too, right? Ideally, Marcus Smart learns how to shoot better and starts knocking down better than 30-something% of his wide open catch and shoot threes. And that makes it easier to move him into the starting group. But without hoping and praying that Marcus Smart becomes a shooter that he just hasn't been over the course of his career, without that happening, the Lakers do, I think, if they want to viably compete for a championship, it would require them going out and trading a first round pick to bring in a starter level 2/3 who slides Austin to a secondary perimeter defensive role, slides Luka to a tertiary perimeter defensive role, allows LeBron to just focus on guarding fours and rebounding, and then makes life easier on DeAndre Ayton by not having so many straight line drives as Rui is kind of giving up. So like that to me is like the clear roster need. It's just a matter of whether or not Rob Pelinka decides that a role player is worth trading a first round pick for. And that's not really how he sees things, unfortunately. The backup big one is interesting because I think Jackson has been mostly fine as the backup big, but I still don't think I would trust him in a playoff series. And if you were somehow able to bring in a starter, like a starting caliber center who moves DeAndre Ayton to a bench role, now all of a sudden the Lakers are really cooking. So that would be something that, you know, And then also, obviously, you know, Jackson Hayes becomes a break glass in case of emergency type center. And then I would say I would trust at that point the starting or the center rotation. As it stands right now, yes, I think Ayton has been good compared to relative to expectations. Yes, Jackson Hayes has been fine as a backup. But remember, if we're talking about title contention, I just don't think those guys are going to hold up against the OKCs of the world, the Denvers of the world, or even shit, you know, trying to deal with Houston's front line, which is their offensive rebound rate. I know Zach Lowe has been banging this drum quite a bit. Their offensive rebound rate is north of 40%, which is unheard of. It's like they're rebounding two out of every five misses that they get that they shoot. And that's why, you know, that's propping up their offensive rating. So yeah, I would say 3-and-D wing, but I also wouldn't exactly cry a river if the Lakers went out and traded for or acquired a big who moved Ayton into a bench role. But I might be in the minority on that one. We'll see. Next question here. Let's see if we have any questions from the chat. I'm trying to find. So Adam is asking, when are they going to sign Drew Timmy? There was a report about that I thought I saw, and I asked about it, and I tried to get any clarity on who they were waiving to do it, and nobody was really able to give me any clarity. So I'm not throwing water on that report or whatever, but it was a little odd that, you know, that report surfaces, and if anything, like Kobe Bufkin, maybe the guy that they would consider doing all of that for, one of the guys that they would consider doing that for, he gets picked up, he goes elsewhere. So they might have to hustle and make that decision quickly. It's clear that J.J. Redick doesn't trust Christian Koloko, so maybe Koloko is the natural fit. I think it would be a mistake to waive Koloko for Drew Timmy personally, but I also have more faith in him than J.J. Redick does. The Lakers also like Magnon, but, you know, the problem with the Lakers 2A guys right now is that a lot of them are kind of looking like they're a year away from being a year away. And that makes it kind of difficult to believe in them too long-term, or let alone that they can help if the Lakers get in a tight spot, right? Injuries and stuff like that. So I guess Drew Timmy could help a little bit there, but I, you know, Christian Koloko started games for the Lakers last year and I thought it was pretty good. So I wouldn't like the idea of signing Timmy for, you know, and waiving Koloko. Next question here from at Bashir41096. What did you make of Rui not closing last night? And what are you hearing / already know on the willingness to have him included in trades? Well, the Lakers, it's not like Rui is off of the table to the extent that like Austin is kind of sort of off of the table, right? On one hand, he is very popular throughout the Lakers organization. He is considered a win by organizational standards, and that is something that really matters to Rob Pelinka. On the other hand, he was up for an extension this year, and those conversations never really got very far. So I would probably say that, you know, if the Lakers, like Pete and I were debating Trae Young this morning, and not Trae Young, Trey Murphy, and I was like, would you swap Rui and a first for Rui and stuff for a first for Trey Murphy? And he said no. We're probably going to pick this conversation up on Friday, but he said no. And I think I'm a yes, just because he does get those threes up in volume. And he, like, Rui right now offers more theoretical spacing. Murphy offers legitimate spacing. So that would be one of the things that I would be kind of pushing towards. But yeah, it's not, to answer the question here, like, as far as the Lakers' willingness to include this guy in trades, yeah, they are. And they, but that said, he's too good. Like, I've seen, some of the conversation, not necessarily from Lakers fans, but like when I see other people, you know, especially people who cover the league nationally, throwing together Lakers trades and stuff, I like far too often see Rui as a, you know, the perception is that they see Rui as salary fodder, you know, and or salary filler. And he's just not. Like, he's a legitimately good NBA player. I think he's miscast on this team out of necessity. And I think whenever the Lakers, or if the Lakers trade him, there's a good chance that they'll see him thrive somewhere else if he is put in a spot that makes more sense for him. But as far as like the Lakers situation here, I do think it would make sense to swap Rui and like a second rounder for Andrew Wiggins. A first, I would want to protect the first if I'm going to give up Rui for Wiggins. But yeah, like if it comes down to it, I haven't been told by anybody close to the Lakers that like Rui is not on the table. That would be ridiculous. There was the comment heading into the offseason that Rui is considered part of the Lakers core. And I received a little bit of pushback on that when I kind of talked about it on the show. So, yeah, I would probably say that, you know, with Rui, I don't want to sound too strong on this. I would be kind of surprised. No. I would say with Rui, if the Lakers trade Rui, it will be with a first round pick for an all-star. That's the kind of move that the Lakers would be looking to make if they move Rui. What I think the Lakers would prefer to do is trade for Rui's replacement with Rui on the team, and then see if Rui continues to be bought in, even though he would then be in a bench role. That is, I think, and I think if the Lakers do make that kind of a deal, they would give themselves a little bit of wiggle room so that, you know, if they make that trade for the starter, they don't do it right at the deadline, because that way, if Rui sulks, they then have time to turn Rui into a player who wouldn't sulk coming off of the bench. But I think the Lakers have great chemistry. You've had plenty of guys sacrificed so far this season. And I would, if I were the Lakers, if I was making this call, I would very confidently bet on the chemistry and culture that the Lakers have built so far this season, and believe that, or be confident that Rui would buy into whatever role he has to play, so long as he gets rewarded for buying into that role after the season with a decent contract. Let's look into the super, or not the supers. Well, if you guys want to leave a super, that'd be great. Let's see. So Doggy X5I trade Reeves for Keon. Absolutely not. This is a little bit more my pace. Keon Ellis for Dalton in a second round pick. I would love to. Don't think that would get it done for the Lakers. But Keon Ellis. Now, here's the thing. It's like I said last night, half the league is called about Keon Ellis, and they're being very careful with their tone of like,
hey, yeah, Keon, like, you're sure, huh? All right, well, what would it take? And, you know, the fact that he hasn't been moved so far would indicate that the price is still pretty high. But the Lakers are one of those teams that have made that call and have kicked those tires, and we'll see what comes of it eventually this season, whenever Sacramento blows it up. But yeah, Keon Ellis would be excellent, but I'm not trading Austin Reeves for Keon. Like, absolutely not. Some of you guys, like, it's bordering on weird how badly some of you guys want Austin off of this team. It's legitimate. This dude dropped an almost 50-point triple-double in a game. There's nobody making the amount of money that Austin is making now, let alone maybe even what he might be making next year, even, who would drop a 50-point triple-double in a game. Like, that, the list of guys who would be capable of doing that in any game under any circumstances is really effing low, short, right? Like, that is a very short list. And you're like, yeah, Keon's a better fit. Then try to find a different way to bring in Keon Ellis. You know who Keon Ellis would fit really well with? Austin Reeves. Like, what are we doing? I just realized that I have an artichoke steaming and a lobster poaching in the sous vide. So I got to go check on those things. My son just woke up as well. Jen just called saying she's on her way home from work. So I'm going to end this one here. Might hop back on a little bit later to record a shorter, lowdown type show. But if not, and if this is the last time you talk or hear from me tonight, then have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you guys tomorrow, right after the Lakers hopefully beat the Clippers. Have a good one, everybody.